Hello everyone and welcome to this week's episode of Boat Briefing. My name is Stuart Campbell and here to help me navigate through all the news from the world of superyachting, making her podcast debut, the yacht writer herself, Katya Damborski. Hello Katya.
Hi Stuart, what introduction.
Yeah.
Very happy to be here, trying to ignore the fact that no one else could make it, so I'm just the kind of second, third or even fourth choice, but... Fine.
First off the bench. Don't worry about that. It's very exciting.
It is indeed, definitely.
You nervous?
Yeah, super nervous. Super nervous.
It is a terrifying prospect.
Yeah, I think it's just your presence, actually.
Well, why don't we kick the podcast off with some breaking news. Literally breaking news. This morning, I understand, you spoke to the captain of the Fed ship W. So what can you tell us?
Yeah, so this just came in. It's the crew of the 58-metre Fed ship W. She was involved in a rescue of a man who was stranded at sea for 5 days off the coast of northern Spain. So he was floating in like a kind of like a donut, like a pool Tory style donut. And he was there, yeah, for 5 days, really suffering in the heat and the sea. And he had an early onset hypothermia and they pulled him out of the water. He was so weak. And the captain was just telling me it was so surreal because they thought they were looking at a piece of debris and suddenly this hand just kind of came out the water and they saw it waving. And I mean, just imagine being the crew and also the man. It's just horrible, but very fortunate that they found him, obviously.
And so what was he doing? Like, how did he end up in this donut in the middle of the Mediterranean?
The captain thinks it wasn't actually the middle of the Mediterranean. They could see land at this point, but...
Oh, it was off the coast of northern Spain.
Yeah.
Okay, so, oh my God.
But the captain thinks that because he was wearing a wetsuit, it's possible that he actually jumped off a passing ship and then was trying to swim over to Spain. I mean, he's a Moroccan national, so probably seeking refuge in Spain, possibly. But, yeah, he just jumped in with this donut in a full-on wetsuit and probably thought he could make it to shore. And obviously... couldn't. It was quite a fair bit of chop, the captain was saying, in the days preceding this. So
it's a miracle rescue.
Really miraculous, the captain was saying. It was so incredibly lucky. They just happened to be passing close to him, but if they hadn't been within, you know, a few hundred metres, they would never have seen him in a million years.
Remarkable. Well, well done to the captain and crew of W for spotting this poor man in the water and rescuing him. Hopefully he's going to be okay.
Yeah, from what I hear, he will be making a full recovery.
So that story, you spoke to the skipper this morning, so that's going up on the website today. We're recording this on Tuesday, so check it out. We'll put the link to this miraculous and remarkable rescue in the description below. So, listeners last week will... might have noted my growing excitement at the thrilling conclusion to the first Ashes test, which took place in Edgbaston. Hours later, I was utterly bereft and miserable because England lost by the tiniest of margins to Australia. So yeah, it's been a low few days whilst I've recovered from that defeat. But the second test kicks off tomorrow at Lord's, which is very exciting. Cricket fan, Katya?
I'm not. But don't you always claim to be Australian
I'm born in Australia.
So it's not quite a bittersweet result for you?
No, I grew up when we moved to England when I was 8. And it was a period of outrageous Australian domination in the cricket. And England were just battered aside year in, year out. So I felt quite sorry for them. And then my heart bled across to the white and red of England instead of the green and gold of Australia.
So it's pity support then?
It started as pity support.
Right.
And then I got quite attached to the team.
Fine.
Now I love them. So anyway, I'll be on the edge of my seat for the next few days. And if I'm particularly depressed next week, it's because England have lost another test match.
But you're a bit chirpier today because you had a nice surf and turf dinner last night, I understand.
Yeah, I had a great dinner last night. So there's a ship Not, you should assume everyone knows, but I guess lots of people don't. There's a residence ship called the World. It looks like a cruise ship, but it's not a cruise ship. It's made up of a couple of hundred apartments, which are owned by residents. And it floats around the world as this floating, very high-end apartment block, basically. And I've never been on board. And they've been a client of Boat International's for some time. So I got this invite, and I couldn't refuse, because I was very curious, having been on 1,000 super yachts, to see what this very high-end residential ship, how it compared in finish terms and design terms and things like that. Obviously, it looks like a cruise ship, but inside, it's very well put together. So every 3 years, it goes in for a yard period and is upgraded and updated. Soft furnishings changed and things like that. And when it goes into the yard, that gives the residents opportunities to upgrade their own apartments. So I went in a couple of them. I went in a 2-bedroom apartment and a 3-bedroom one. And the space is actually really impressive. There's no double height ones. There's no like mezzanines and things like that. They're all single level. But the 3-bedroom one was right at the front of the ship. And yeah, I was really impressed.
So did it feel like a cruise ship when you were walking around?
No. I've been on cruise ships. In fact, I'm going on another one pretty soon. Don't tell anyone. It doesn't, no, because there's no one around. Because there's only ever, it's a big boat, and there's only ever about 200 maximum-ish residents on board at any one time. So you don't, it's not empty, but you never fight over a deck chair, for instance. You never have to wait find a table at one of the 4 or 5 restaurants on the boat. There's always availability in every service
right.
on the boat.
And the communal areas then, there's kind of a lot of space that people can get together and activities, I guess?
Loads of activities. So at dinner, and there was a few of us on the media side, and I sat next to Wendy, who is a resident on the ship. And she is just the world's best ambassador for the world because she was so glowing talking about it. And she's on about 8 months of the year. So she doesn't get off. It's amazing. And then when, you know, every month she'll, a friend, every summer a friend will come and stay with her for a month because she's got an apartment big enough to host guests. And she was effusive. She was said, you know, every day she's doing activities. There's a book club. There's dance classes, the gym's massive. She does all the crossings and she loves them because every day of the crossing there are organized activities for the people on the boat. So she said it's not a case of ever getting bored. Conversely, her biggest anxiety is FOMO because there's so much to do. She doesn't want to miss out on anything. And so she'll go and sign up for that activity, but think, oh God, but they're doing the other one at the same time and I really want to do both. So there's no opportunity for boredom. The program is really, really cleverly tailored to the residents.
Yeah, sounds like a very attentive staff.
Tons of crew. Yeah, and they're all very nice.
And the dinner, what did you have?
I had a lobster bisque and a big old steak.
Oh, yeah.
But then I had to get the tender back to shore because it was quite a late night. So I didn't, I missed the souffle.
Oh, you missed the souffle?
Yeah.
Nightmare. How can you possibly say you're in a chirpy mood after missing the souffle?
Well, I was so keen to see the apartments. So that was my opportunity. So I had to forsake the souffle to tour the boat. But the after London, she's only in town for a few days. She's off to Antwerp next and then the Baltic and then up to Norway.
Gosh. You can catch up with her in Norway, no?
Yeah, maybe. But what's interesting about the program is decided democratically. So they recently took a vote about where the boat will go in 2025. So it's not dictated.
Or the residents vote, you mean?
Yeah, so there's a committee and the residents get together collectively, say, we want to go to West Papua or we want to cruise Indonesia or we want to go down to Australia or we'll just do a Caribbean season. And that's so various options are presented to them and they collectively decide on where the world will sail.
But does it not depend on things like fuel costs? I mean, do they pay on top for
Yes, fuel? It's kind of an annual, so that you obviously pay for your apartment, you own the apartment.
Right.
And the residents own the ship.
Wow.
And then obviously there's a yearly kind of service charge, sinking fund kind of thing that goes into improvements and fuel and running costs, etc. And they reckon around, at any one time, about 10% of the apartments are for sale.
Right.
But you can sublet your apartment as well. You can rent it out.
And if you sell it, if it's for sale, it's being sold by the resident.
Yeah.
Is there estate agents involved?
There are agents.
Or brokers.
There are brokers.
Your brokers.
Yeah. Then yeah. Yeah. There is sometimes an intermediary relationship. I must admit, I don't know a lot about it.
Mm.
But yeah, for a couple of hundred million, couple of million euros, dollars, so it's all dollars, I can imagine as a way to retire or have a piece of real estate floating around the world in some of the coolest places. So low hassle. I really got it. I was a bit skeptical. Well, not skeptical, that's a bit too strong. I wasn't sure about it, but having seen it.
You're sold.
Sold.
Nice.
Book me up.
I bet it must be quite nice to be a crew on board because they've got the same people that they are taking care of and...
Yeah, they know everyone's names.
Exactly, yeah.
Everyone's particular tastes and habits and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, it's good stuff.
Nice.
Anyway, that was my dinner. A bit of housekeeping now. We should mention that the DocWalk salary survey is live. So we'll put a link in the description. You can... take part at the Boat International website or DocWalk's website. It's super easy to fill in your details. It's just a simple online survey. And it's really important that we get as many people taking part because it really helps demystify crew salaries to the benefit of crew, captains, and owners. Transparency, as best as we can get it, is key, I think, when it comes to crew salaries. And all the results will be published for everyone to see in the September issue of DocWalk.
Yeah, especially important for green crew who are just coming into the industry. A resource like that is really valuable, and I like how many variables the data takes into account. So.
Yes, and the more entries we have, the more reliable the data, obviously. So if you're listening and you'd like to take part, super simple, get involved over at Boat International or DocWalk. So, slightly more seriously, we should probably mention the conclusion to the dramatic and tragic OceanGate submarine story that had the world gripped over the last week or so. Obviously, our hearts go out to all those on board the sub who sadly lost their lives as it descended down to the Titanic. So the world of deep sea exploration is a small and quite tight-knit community. So there was some pretty raw emotion expressed to me on various channels, and they were really shaken up. But perhaps what most hit people is the fact that many saw it coming and gave fair warning to OceanGate. And we've seen that from James Cameron and Rob McCullum from EOS Expeditions and various other commentators in the press. But it really gripped the world, this one. Giving the ongoing narrative about the occupants running out of air and the massive search and rescue operation going on above them. But to insiders, the whole episode was slightly baffling because they knew it had imploded early on in the piece, given certain telltale noises picked up by the US Navy. So I mentioned Rob McCallum, co-founder of EOS Expeditions. So he shared an email with the BBC which he wrote to OceanGate CEO Stockton Rush in 2018, which turned out to be remarkably prescient. He sent the same email to me. So I thought I'd just pick out some excerpts from it. Rob wrote to Stockton Rush, "I think you are on shaky ground in regards to refuting the need for classification. Your website continues to mislead people that your submersible will be classed DNVGL when it is not clearly the case, when that is clearly not the case, rather. Classification is not simply a once per year exercise. It has to be earned through every step from drawing board to sea trials. It is not a perfect system, but it is the best system we have for ensuring there is some degree of third party cross check and audit that prevents a linear track of thinking. Indeed, a large part of the reason that commercial subs are so safe today is because of this rigor. So Rob, obviously they're making the point that OceanGate's submersible Titan was not classed by a third party classification society. He goes on to say, no matter how good the pilot, a vehicle that has inherent flaws of sufficient quantity will be dangerous. Without good design, sound engineering and quality construction, there may be hidden faults that later fail at a critical stage. He says, I understand you have a counter view, and I do not imagine that my plea will do anything to change your pace or trajectory. I simply wanted to raise a flag as someone who is not a manufacturer nor a commercial competitor that I think you are potentially placing yourself and your clients in a dangerous dynamic. So that was written in 2018, and 5 years later, those warnings very tragically came true with the loss of the submersible. So what I understand from this exchange and from what Rob shared with me is that OceanGate's CEO really felt like he was in some kind of David and Goliath struggle with the more established exploration players in the subspace, but these guys really just wanted safety and sound engineering to be considered first and foremost. So it's also a matter of, there's a perception issue here as well. And the last thing this community needs is people thinking it's just a bunch of rich guys on deep sea tourist dives, because that's not the reality at all. The science being conducted at these depths by these divers is breaking new ground, revealing new species and teaching us more about the planet. And operators who don't play by the rules put all of this at risk, which is understandably a source of enormous frustration. So this story is going to roll on, and we're going to try and bring a bit of light to various parts of it. So we'll keep you updated on those. But yeah, shocking, tragic, but entirely foreseeable to some in the industry.
Yeah, I mean, that email is really haunting, isn't it? Pointing out all that stuff about the regulations. And I think it just shows how incredibly important those regulations are. And I think the idea of submersibles is very close to everyone who works in yachting. It's not something that's foreign to us. This conversation comes up. So this will definitely send a lot of shockwaves through the industry. But you do have to remember that, of course, they were diving to some pretty insane depths, which isn't really the norm for classic explorer yachts.
Yeah, this is a very different kind of sub to those ones you see on the back of explorer yachts, which are obviously all fully classed and compliant. Hopefully this is just a one-off, a very tragic incident, which we won't see the like again. So let's talk a bit more about you, Katya. You are obviously the online yachts editor at Boat International. You also have an alter ego on Instagram, The Yacht Writer, which many people may know. How many followers now?
We're up to 104,000, but we've been sat there for a little while, I have to say.
Is that right?
Yeah.
It was, when you started, what were you on when you started at BI?
30. Wow. Or even less. So yeah, it has grown quite a lot with the help of BI, of course, all these fun events I get to do. Actually, I was at a Pardo event on the weekend. They had a 50th birthday gala, which was fantastic. It was in Trieste in northern Italy, just kind of near Slovenia. And it's beautiful. I love Trieste. I think everyone should go there. And at this gala, someone came up to me and they said, oh, you're the Yacht Writer. And I was there thinking, yes, I am. Look at me. I'm so famous. And then kind of later in the night, I was thinking, this is an event of just the yachting industry. This is quite a niche field. So maybe my notoriety isn't quite quite the claim to fame that I sometimes think it is. But no, I love being a yacht writer. And I love having that account. It massively helps me learn things, and it forces me to research and fact check everything I post, because some of my followers just have the most niche knowledge, and sometimes they'll correct me politely, other times they'll tear me limb from limb. And honestly, I think I'd rather make a mistake in front of you than in front of one of my followers, because they're scary and they really know their stuff. So yeah, it's forced me to be incredibly accurate.
And is there a good volume of interaction with these people, like in messages and emails and things like that?
Do you know what? I think that is why. That is a secret to the yacht writer, is that I rarely ever ignore a message. I take the time to reply to most people. I think I can say that I have some friends on there, people I've met in real life, from meeting them on Instagram, people I email back and forth, people I can count on to help me if I need anything. I'm thinking about travelling in a month's time, and one of my followers lives in the place I want to travel to, so he was giving me some advice and chatting to me. I have some people that I really care about on there, actually, just people I know on the internet. So it's a really nice little community.
Has it surprised you how quickly it's grown?
Massively. Oh my gosh, yes. I just wanted it to have to learn and keep my toe in the industry while I took a bit of time out, so I could come back to BI and say, look, I've done something. But yeah, it really took off. I think it's not as hard as people think it is. People are always really impressed, and I always feel a bit like a fraud because it wasn't that hard. Yachting is the kind of industry where people are really passionate about it, so it's really easy to meet like-minded people who like what you're doing and like talking about yachts and want to consume that kind of content. And I love yachts, so it was easy to tap in and create content that I knew people like me would also like, you know.
But what you do well is you add a depth of personality to the channel, I think.
Yes.
A lot of people just post pictures and reels, whereas you reveal a bit more about yourself and your writer.
That's true. I used to do it more before I worked at BI because I was less subconscious then, but now, you know, I come into the office, and I hate the idea that I've been on the yacht writer on the weekend telling my followers about my weekend, thinking I'm some kind of famous A-lister. But I should get more into it, because I think my followers did like it a lot more when I was sharing a bit more about, you know, when I had a bad day at work. But now I can't really do that, because otherwise I'll get a text from Stuart Campbell.
So if you're not following Katya, go head to Instagram right now. It's the yacht writer. It's a brilliant account.
Yeah, I mean, there'll be some good content on there later, because I just did my visit to Shamrock 5.
Yeah, tell me more about that.
Yeah, that was fantastic. So again, I don't know all that much about sailing yachts, so I felt like a bit of a fraud going to see her, but I'm really glad I did. I kind of got to understand and appreciate the beauty of the J class, the beauty of the wooden sailing yachts, and hear from the people who had not only working on restoring her now, but also 20 years ago when she was at Pendennis. And it was brilliant. I mean, I saw all the workers hammering the 100-year-old wooden planks into the holes that had been there since she was built. And I was just watching them thinking, I could not do that. I do not have the patience for that. So
Shamrock 5, one of the oldest J's.
Yeah, one of the three surviving ones on the water and the only existing one built in wood.
Wow. And so yes. She's undergoing a comprehensive rebuild at the moment.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, she was completely down to the metal when we saw her.
And she, the ambition, because I was chatting to her owner about, he wants to get her ready for America's Cup 2024.
Exactly.
That's still the ambition?
Still the goal, yeah. I mean, she won't be a full-time racer. She'll do a bit of kind of leisurely Saint-Tropez cruises, but yeah. Get her back on the water. Get her back amongst the other Jays.
Well, it's great to see so much effort and, frankly, money being spent on such a historic boat.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you'll have to come and see her. There's a lot of work still to be done. So she's down in Southampton now. And I think everyone's really passionate about the project, which is really good to see.
Excellent. I look forward to seeing that on the Yacht Writer later. So this is your first time on the brokerage pick, in the brokerage pick battle.
Yes.
So what have you gone for?
I just said I wasn't a sailing yacht girl, but I've gone for a sailing yacht. And it's technically not new for sale. It's a CA change, but she was new to market last year. And her name is Melody. She's asking 19 million euro with Scandinavian Marine. And she's an all aluminium sailing yacht, the largest yacht built in Estonia at 42 meters. So still a smaller yacht compared to the 100 meter plus giants that Germany's rolling out every other week. But I'm super excited to see yachts coming out of the Eastern European yards, given that I am from that part of the world. The Czech Republic hasn't quite caught up with the yacht building industry yet, probably because they're landlocked. But I'm holding out hope yet.
So Melody, yeah, read us.
Exactly, and brand new, just built
brand
last
new.
Year.
Got a commendation at the World Superior Awards in Istanbul.
Know that.
Interesting. So what's she asking?
19 million euro.
19 million euros. Okay, good pick. I've gone power. I've gone for 55 meter Camelia built by Amels, which recently received a 2 million euro price drop. So she's now asking 29.5 million euros with Torrent Yachts. So she's one of the very famous and successful limited editions 180s designed by Mr. Haywood and with an interior by Remy Tessier. So she's currently La Spezia with VAT paid. So the reason I have chosen this yacht is for the things she's done. Obviously, it's a tin boat, so resales, always pretty reliable.
Obviously.
And Amels. But really, she's got a great story. She's never stood still, basically. So she was in the Med last year, but her record to date is very impressive and includes a trip up to Svalbard, during which an icebreaker preceded her. Breaking up the pack ice and clearing a path, forging a way for Camelia to follow through. And she's done plenty of traveling outside the polar regions, including loads of transatlantics. And back in the 21-22 winter season, she covered pretty much the entire Caribbean from top to bottom, all the way from the Bahamas to Grenada. So she's a really proven performer, Camelia, and therefore my brokerage pick of the week.
Wow, I'm impressed it's not a classic yacht this time. Look at you, we're growing.
Or a fed ship, or a classic fed ship, or some knackered old thing.
Or a catamaran. I really thought you might go for catamaran.
I chose a cat last week. Can't be too predictable.
No.
So let's whip through some headlines. Kicking us off this week is the news that FedShip's 84.2 metre superyacht Project 710 has been spotted leaving the shipyard in Alsmeer. And is now en route to the North Sea in preparation for sea trials. Really beautiful looking boat, this. She's the newest hybrid vessel to emerge from the Dutch shipyard and is named Obsidian. So what, Katja, are you aware of what Obsidian is?
I think it's lava that's cooled down very quickly. Is that
excellent,
right?
Excellent Wikipedia.
Yeah, thank you.
The yacht has a very futuristic look from RWD in collaboration with Monk Design and is equipped with biofuel generators, interestingly. The design features an aqua lounge with large windows below sea level, similar to the Nemo lounge many of you will remember from Savannah, and an asymmetrical atrium staircase leading up to a lower deck dining saloon where a wall opens to reveal the terrace view just above sea level. Just one of the best looking FedShips of late, I think, this boat.
Yeah, and you mentioned similarities to Savannah, and she's also got other similarities to Savannah. I think she's got 4.5 times the electrical capacity, I think that's right. So similar to Savannah in pioneering that slightly more eco-conscious cruising.
And HVO, right?
Exactly, yeah, which I'm so excited about. You know I love HVO.
I know, you're our HVO expert. Hydrogenated vegetable oil, is that right?
Exactly.
There you go. According to Boat Pro, FedShip has 16 projects currently in build, including 1010 and Obsidian. The yard is also expected to deliver Project 822 and Project 823 this year. What's next?
Yeah, so from Aalsmeer to Italy, we also have the 47.5-metre Parabellum hitting the water in La Spezia. So she is one of San Lorenzo's 500 EXP models. She's been built for a Greek owner, and she's one of the largest new build deliveries to Greece in recent years. Now, I know you're thinking, student, what does Parabellum mean?
I'm not going to do any hasty Wikipedia-ing. I want you to tell. I have no idea.
All right, let me tell you. So it's a Latin phrase, and it's actually the second half of the Latin maxim. Here we go. You ready for the Latin?
Yeah.
Leo and Luca are going to hate this butchered half Italian pronunciation. Sivas passim parabellum. So it basically means if you want peace, then prepare for war. So the parabellum part is prepare for war.
It's quite ominous.
Yeah, but I think that's kind of cool because although she isn't a warship by any stretch, she's definitely pretty well kitted out. Her sister ship is Ocean Dreamwalker 3. She has a sub, an Airbus H125. She can carry sailing yachts of up to 9 meters, and there's also a pool. So she's pretty serious, well prepared for a 47 meter. And Ocean Dreamwalker 3 is actually more usually seen around the cold shores of Antarctica. So we might be able to see similar exploration from Parabellum.
So Parabellum is prepare for war. So that's the apocalypse. So it's the escape vessel, basically.
Exactly, yeah. We should start making friends with the owner now, I feel.
Last up, we have the news that we have a new contender, or according to Raphael, the new fastest yacht on planet Earth. It is the Bleed 80, fastest super yacht, I should qualify, which has been designed and built by Victory Design in Pisa. She has hit speeds of over 70 knots in sea trials. Actually, 73 knots, according to AIS. So the Bleed 80 is a super cool looking thing. Obviously, looks like an absolute arrow. And the interior also suits. It's all fluid curves and low-level lighting. It's a very cool boat. We'll put the link in the description so you can see for yourself. But it did inspire us to look more closely at fast yachts for our data section. And as ever, this is brought to you by Boat Pro, the super yacht industry's leading market intelligence service. So according to Raphael, There are only 10 yachts over 24 meters that can exceed 60 knots. And we're going to concentrate just on the top five. So the Bleed 80, that's B-O-L-I-D-E 80, is the new fastest super yacht in the world, hitting 73 knots, if AIS can be believed. The official, that figure is not official, but Raphael is, you know, betting on it.
And Raphael knows all.
Raphael knows all. So second up, we have Fonas, the 41.5-metre yacht built in Spain in 2000. She was actually launched as Fortuna for the former King of Spain. So she clocked 70.1 knots. Who's in third?
The World Is Not Enough, predictably one of John Sloopy's projects. And she was built in the Netherlands in 2004. And she could touch about 70 knots when she was delivered, but subsequent refits have hit her top speed, presumably because weight was added.
In fourth is 68.18-metre Destriero, former holder of the Blue Riband Transatlantic Speed Record. She was built at Fincantieri in 1991 for the Aga Khan. So last time I saw Destriero, she looked a little sad, so I hope a future can be found for this very famous and historic boat. But in her day, she could hit 66 knots. For a 68.18-metre yacht hitting 66 knots. That is insane.
Yeah, crazy. So in fifth, we have the 36-metre Galeo Cerdo. I feel like you gave me this one because you didn't want to pronounce that name.
I definitely didn't want to pronounce that. Your Italian and Latin is so good.
I know, yeah. Look at me go. So she built by Rodriguez in Italy in 2003, and this is the former Wally Power, built by the one and only Luca Bassani, and she clocks 65 knots. Quite a lot of Italian boats in that roundup, isn't there?
Yeah, they like their speed.
They do.
So the Bleed 80 is the smallest of that lot, but the fastest at 73, then Fonas, 70 knots, The World Is Not Enough at 42.4 metres, 70 knots, but now a few knots off that given refits. Then Destriero, 66 knots, and then Galeo Cerdo, 65 knots. There should be a notable mention here for 35.27-metre Moonraker, another John Stolupi project, which was built in 1992 in Norway, which once hit 66.7 knots, but a new engine configuration has reduced output, meaning speeds nowadays more like 33 knots at the top end. So she's been neutered.
Interesting. John Sloopy likes his fast boats.
He really, really does.
Although now he's got, you know, the X-Solo.
Is that right? The Tankoa?
Yeah.
Ah.
Well, if the name is to be believed.
What's it been renamed as?
Now you catch me. Now put my yacht knowledge to the test.
Come on, yacht writer.
Casino Royale.
Ah, okay.
And she's been repainted white.
Ah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Makes sense. Well, congratulations, Mr. Stolupi. And that brings us to an end of this week's boat briefing. Katya, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me. I hope all the listeners enjoy my presence so I can come back again.
Have you enjoyed it?
I have really enjoyed it. What a way to spend an hour just chatting with Stuart and gossiping.
Yeah, and I've learnt new things too, like solo, now Casino Royale. Who knew?
And you got some Instagram tips, so I expect to see you smashing the Instagram a bit later on.
It's so time consuming. I know you say it's not, but I make it more natural, comes more naturally to you, I think.
Possibly.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. This episode of Boat Briefing was mixed and produced by Adam Geist and is a production of Boat International Media. Come on, England, Lords, in the second test of the Ashes series kicking off tomorrow. And we'll see you next time.